Brothers and sisters in the Sangha, Jai Veen. So we've been on a very long journey together. This is our ninth night. And it seems more like nine lifetimes. And in our journey we've been going up into the mountains. We've been going higher and higher into the mountains. And tonight, we reach the very top of the mountain. Now, when you go up into the mountains, the air is quite thin. It's more difficult to breathe. And sometimes one feels a bit dizzy because of the height that you've come up. And of course you're quite tired because of all the effort it's taken you to get to the top of the mountain. But let's keep going together. Because we're all together, we can go up that mountain. Because tonight we reach the pinnacle. We get right to the top of the mountain. We're going to be looking at Prajna Paramita. And there's no further to go. Now this is quite difficult material. So I hope that you're all quite fit and ready. And that you're willing to take this last step in the journey. Now you remember that yesterday we were looking at Dhyana Paramita. We saw that with Dhyana you become aware of yourself right now. And by becoming aware of yourself right now, you can begin to integrate all your energies. And once your energies are integrated, you can begin to refine and purify them. And when you have refined and purified your energies, you're able to see reality as it is. You're able to experience prajna. So I thought before we went any further, let's just settle ourselves down. Let's just spend a few minutes becoming more mindful. The material we're going to be looking at today is really very lofty indeed. And it requires all our spiritual energies to be fully engaged. So I'm just going to ask you right now to settle yourselves comfortably. All your backs immediately straighten. And just decide to sit quietly for the next 5 minutes or so. And just when you're ready, close your eyes. Become aware of the ground underneath you. The contact between your body and the ground. Just feel that sensation of contact.
और इस स्पर्श की संवेदना को अनुभव करें।
Just keep bringing your mind back to that sensation of contact.
अपने मन को इस स्पर्श की संवेदना के तरफ बार बार वापस लाइए।
And gradually spread your awareness throughout your body.
और धीरे धीरे इस जागृति को अपने सारे शरीर में जाने दीजिए।
Fill your body with awareness.
अपने शरीर को जागृति से भर दीजिए।
And then bring your attention to your feelings.
अपना ध्यान अपनी भावनाओं की तरफ लाइए।
Are you happy or sad?
क्या आप सुखी हैं या दुखी हैं?
Are your emotions pleasant or painful?
आपकी भावनाएं सुखद हैं या दुखद हैं?
Is there anything on your mind? Anything troubling you?
आपके मन को किसी बात की तकलीफ हो रही है?
Just notice what's there. Just observe it. Just be mindful of it. Just watch what's going on in your mind without judging, without blocking.
अपने मन में क्या चल रहा है इसे क्यों देखिए उसे रोकिए मत।
Just keep bringing your attention back to your body and your feelings.
अपने ध्यान को अपने शरीर में और अपनी भावनाओं की तरफ लाते रहिए।
Whatever thoughts come, just observe them and let them go.
जो भी विचार मन में आते हैं, उनके तरफ देखिए और उन्हें जाने दीजिए।
And when you feel ready, open your eyes and bring your attention here to the front. So I hope that you're all feeling much calmer, much more settled, much more fresh. We've had some small experience, at least, of dhyana. And that's the basis for prajna. So prajna is the sixth of the six paramitas. We've looked at dana, shila, kshanti, virya and dhyana. So now we come to prajna. And we've seen that prajna is the paramita. It's the presence of prajna that turns the other five into paramitas. It's very important that we're generous just for a decent human life. It's important that we practice morality for a decent human life. And so on with the others. But when they're joined with prajna, they become paramitas. We go on to another level altogether. They become the virtues of the Bodhisattva. So, this clearly is a very important topic indeed. And the question immediately comes, what is prajna? Well, the truth is, it's very difficult to say. A prajna isn't really anything that can be captured in words. Every time you think you've described prajna, you realize that you've missed something. It's a bit like trying to catch the wind. You can't really get hold of it. Or even better, it's a bit like trying to hold the sky. Prajna goes far deeper than words can take us. Prajna has to be experienced. It can't be learned. You can't go and get a degree in prajna. You can't pass an exam in prajna. Prajna has to be experienced, not learned in words. This is the first thing that we need to really grasp hold of. Prajna is different from ordinary knowledge. You can have a whole lot of knowledge, even a whole lot of knowledge of Buddhism, and not have prajna. I've met some learned professors in the West who are professors of Buddhism. And they know everything about Buddhism. From the first teachings right until the last teachings. They know everything. They know far more than I know. But there's no prajna. There's no real understanding. So knowledge is quite different from prajna. On the other hand, you can have very little knowledge and have prajna. There's a very famous story in the Pali scriptures. The monks staying together in a certain vihara all were given certain verses to learn by heart. And those gathas, they encapsulated the Dharma. So everybody tried to learn their gathas. And they all got them off by heart. Except for one poor monk. He couldn't remember anything. And so the Buddha said, okay, you can't remember the whole set of gathas, just remember one gatha. Just two lines. So he tried to learn them for many days. But he just couldn't remember them. And all the other monks were calling him stupid and foolish. And they just gave him the job of sweeping the vihara. And they just used to say, hey stupid, come and do this. And that's the way they thought of him. But he felt so ashamed that he made a real effort. And he just managed to learn three words. Everything is impermanent. That's all he could remember. But all the time he was sweeping, he was just saying, everything is impermanent, everything is impermanent. And one day the Buddha came, and he heard the monks talking about this other monk. And they were calling him stupid and useless. All he can do is just sweep. But the Buddha said, no, he is enlightened. You know all the gathas, but you don't know what they mean. He just knows three words, but he knows what they really mean. And so he is the one who is enlightened, even though he hasn't got any knowledge. So the most learned professor may not have prajna, but the most simple, the most ignorant, most illiterate person can have prajna. Prajna is not to do with knowledge. There's another story that makes this point too. There was a very great Indian monk. His name was Naropa. And he lived in Nalanda University. You know that the ruins are there still in Bihar. And he was very, very learned indeed. And he was very much revered as one of the most learned abbots of that monastery. And people came from many, many miles to see him. People came from South India, they came from Indonesia, they came from China to see him. He was so famous. But one day he was sitting in his cell, in his room, reading a Dhamma text. And he was studying it very carefully. And he heard a little sound in front of him. And he looked, and there was a little old lady. Maybe a little old lady straight out of a village. And so Naropa looked up and he looked at the lady. And she just looked back at him. And she said to him, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Well, I'm reading a book." And she said, "Do you understand the words, or do you understand the meaning?" And Naropa was completely shocked. And he went into a kind of brainstorm. He realized he knew all those words. He could recite the whole Buddhist scriptures off by heart. But he didn't know what they meant. So he just gave up his post as abbot. He just wore old rags. And he went in search of that old woman. Because he felt that she could teach him the meaning of the Dhamma. And eventually he did find her, and he found other teachers, and he did find the meaning of the Dhamma. So in this way, I hope we've got the message that prajna is different from ordinary intellectual, conceptual understanding. Intellectual. So, well, let's take an example right now. Everything is impermanent. That's the essence of the Dhamma. Sabbe sankhara anicca. That is the essence of the Dhamma. Are you enlightened? If you really knew what that meant, you'd be enlightened. But you can understand the words. Everything? Well, that's everything. Impermanent? Well, that means doesn't last. You know what the words mean. But do you understand the meaning? That's the difference between knowledge and prajna. And it requires an extra leap to really have prajna. And you may spend many, many years just saying to yourself everything is impermanent without having prajna. There's a famous story in the Japanese tradition, the Zen tradition, about a monk who was doing that. He was just saying, everything is impermanent, everything is impermanent. But no prajna. Then one day, he was holding out a cup and somebody was pouring tea into it. And the person pouring the tea accidentally spilled some hot tea on his hand. So he dropped the cup. The cup shattered. And he really saw that everything is impermanent. Prajna arose for him. So I think we've understood sufficiently that prajna is different from our ordinary knowledge and understanding. And gaining prajna is the goal of Buddhism. It's a direct, intuitive insight. It's direct because it doesn't come through words. Words may help you to gain that direct insight, but the insight itself is not in words. It's intuitive. That means it's not just your intellect, it's not even your emotions. It's your whole mind. And it's insight. It goes into the depths of what is. It's seeing things as they really are. So let's try and understand this a bit more. The Buddha teaches that usually we've got things the wrong way up. We see things in terms of the viparyasas. Viparyasa means topsy-turvy, the wrong way up. And that's the way we usually see things. We think up is down. We think down is up. We think left is right. Right is left. It's not just that we've got things wrong, but we think we've got them right. So let's look at these four viparyasas. First of all, we take what is really impermanent for permanent. We treat things in our life as if they were going to last forever. For instance, we do that with possessions. We have some material thing and we think, well, that's going to last forever. Of course, if somebody asks us, we wouldn't say that it's going to last forever. But we're acting as if it was going to last forever. So when we lose it, when it's stolen, we feel very, very upset indeed. And that's particularly true, of course, of our loved ones, the people we're close to. Most of the time we go on assuming that they're going to be living forever. And we feel deeply upset when we realize that that's not the case. But of course, the most important thing that we take for permanent when it's really impermanent is ourselves. We assume we are going to live forever. And this is particularly true when one is quite young. As you get towards the end of your life, you're sort of forced more and more to accept that it's not going to last forever. But we live as if our lives were going to last eternally. So this is the first viparyasa. We take for permanent what is really impermanent. And that particularly applies to ourselves. The second point is that we take as if it was real what is really unreal. This is quite a difficult concept to communicate. And it's particularly true of ourselves again. we think that there is within us something that is permanent and real. Something that is independent of each experiencing situation. It's what the ancient Buddhists referred to as Atman. We believe there's an Atman which owns our experience. Something permanent, something independent, something enduring. And, well, we act on the basis of believing in that Atman. We feel very strong attachment to that Atman. We think that the whole world revolves around that Atman. But the Buddha says that there is no Atman. Really, we are an ever-changing pattern of various different factors. You got some experience of this when you were doing mindfulness just now. If you look very carefully, you'll find that there was nothing there that wasn't changing. The sensations that you had, they were constantly changing. The feelings, the emotions you had were constantly shifting and changing. The thoughts that you have were constantly streaming through your mind. Even your desires are constantly changing. So everything that makes up what you are is changing. And this is what we need to realize. But what we do is we think that there's something in there that doesn't change. We think there's something in there that's real and permanent. So we misinterpret our experience. And of course, the fact that we take for permanent what is really impermanent and for real what is really unreal leads to all our suffering. And this is the third viparyasa. We take for blissful what is really painful. We think that there's real lasting happiness to be found amongst these conditioned things. We think that if we can have certain things and have certain people around us, we can be really, finally happy. It's a bit like when you're in love. When you're just going to get married. You're really looking forward to it. I've not been married, so I don't know from personal experience. But you think, well, when I'm married, everything will be wonderful. But those of you who are married, I'm sure will agree, it's not true. There are all sorts of problems that come up. All the problems you thought you'd solve, well, other ones are there. But we think there's going to be a time when everything's going to be perfect. And it's in lots of areas of our life this happens. When I get this, then I'll be happy. When I do that, then I'll be happy. And we live our life all the time like that. But of course, when we get wherever it is we're aiming, there's more problems. And some of the things that we thought were going to solve our problems actually create more problems. Now, it's not that there isn't happiness and pleasure in life. It's true of marriage, it's true of everything. But there's nothing in our life that will make us permanently and abidingly happy. And the fact that we mistake the impermanent for permanent and the unreal for real means that we bring ourselves suffering. We try to grasp onto something and hold it when actually it just evaporates. It's a bit like trying to catch clouds. You think that cloud is something that's really wonderful and that you want. But it's just mist, it just evaporates. So in this way we lead ourselves into great suffering. The Buddha said that suffering comes from craving. Well, if we could actually get what we craved, we wouldn't suffer. The problem is that what we crave is impermanent and unreal. So we can't have it, we can't keep it. And that causes our suffering. So there's one final viparyasa. We take for beautiful what is in fact ugly. We've got very strong attraction to things. They seem so beautiful, so desirable. And we miss the fact that there is actually much higher beauty elsewhere. So for instance, yesterday I was talking about the dhyanas. If you've had any experience of the dhyanas, you'll know that the beauty of the dhyanas is beyond anything you can experience in this life. And sometimes when you've had a strong experience of dhyana, things that seemed beautiful before seem quite ugly. So we don't realize the higher beauty that lies within us. This is the Buddha's message. It's quite a tough message. It's like some medicine. It does you a lot of good, but it tastes nasty. And sometimes when you take the medicine, you think it's just so tasteless, so horrible tasting. But it does you good. So this message of the Buddha's is sometimes difficult to take. But it saves us so much suffering, so much pain. So those are the four viparyasas. With prajna, we turn everything the right way up. We realize the emptiness of our ordinary way of living and seeing. We see what is impermanent as impermanent. We see what is unreal as unreal. We see what will bring pain as painful. We realize that ordinary experience, even though it brings us some pleasure and happiness, does not bring permanent satisfaction. And with prajna, we realize what is permanent or eternal, what is real and what is blissful. With prajna, you see what is eternal. You see what is real. And you experience the bliss of freedom. So once you have prajna, your whole experience is transformed. You really understand what life means. And you live in accordance with the way things are. And that means that you realize that there's nothing permanent in you. There's no permanent self. You realize that you're part of life. That you're completely bound up with other people. You're interconnected with them. You feel as if you're part of a single web of life. So you feel a complete identity with all other beings. So with prajna comes karuna. Really, prajna and karuna are the same thing. If you see things as they really are, then you feel nothing but compassion and maitri for all other beings. So prajna means karuna. Karuna means prajna. And there's a spontaneous outpouring of love and well-wishing towards all beings. With prajna, you engage in compassionate action for the benefit of others. So prajna is the basis for the bodhisattva's mind. It's the basis of the bodhicitta. Because the bodhisattva has some prajna, he or she realizes that they're completely bound up with other beings. So from that point on, the bodhisattva lives for other people as much as for self. And this is the quality that we need to develop above all. So, the obvious question is, how do we do it? I've been talking at such a high level. You all look very serious. Well, these are serious topics. But you can't live at that level all the time. How do you get to that level? How do you get prajna? Well, fortunately, as always, the Buddha Dhamma is very encouraging.
तो जैसा हमेशा है बुद्ध धर्म जो है हमेशा प्रोत्साहित करने का काम करता है.
It tells us the steps and stages we need to go through to get to prajna.
बुद्ध धर्म हमेशा ऐसे चरणबद्ध मार्ग हमें बताता है ताकि हम प्रज्ञा की तरफ कैसे जा सकें.
In fact, it says there are three levels of prajna.
तो वास्तव में तीन स्तर प्रज्ञा के बुद्ध धर्म में बताए.
These three levels, in a sense, are not proper prajna.
तो ये तीन स्तर ये सही प्रज्ञा में विश्वास नहीं.
They're approaches to prajna.
तो ये प्रज्ञा की तरफ जाने की मार्ग.
So there are three kinds of prajna.
तो तीन प्रकार की प्रज्ञा
है. There's श्रुतमय प्रज्ञा.
एक श्रुतमय प्रज्ञा.
The prajna that consists in listening.
तो प्रज्ञा जो सुनने में समाविष्ट है.
Then there's चिंतमय प्रज्ञा.
दूसरी है चिंतामय प्रज्ञा.
That is the prajna that consists in reflection.
तो ये प्रज्ञा है जो आपके चिंतन से संबंधित है.
Then there's finally भावनामय प्रज्ञा.
और तीसरी है भावनामय प्रज्ञा.
This is the wisdom that comes from deep meditation.
और ये ऐसी प्रज्ञा है जो गहरे ध्यान साधना से निर्माण होती है.
And भावनामय प्रज्ञा is the true prajna.
और भावनामय प्रज्ञा ये सही प्रज्ञा है.
So I'm going to go through these in turn, and you can begin to think how you can put them into practice.
तो आप एक-एक करके इनको देख सकते हैं और उनका आचरण कैसा करें ये आप समझ सकते हैं.
Every one of you can be doing some work on all three of these levels.
आप इसे हर एक इक्कीस स्तर पे कोई कोई ना कोई कार्य कर सकते हैं.
So this first of all, श्रुतमय प्रज्ञा.
तो सबसे पहले है श्रुतमय प्रज्ञा.
Well, in a way, that's what you're doing now.
तो एक तरह से आप यही बात अभी कर रहे
हैं. You're listening to the Dhamma.
आप धम्म सुन रहे हैं.
I hope I'm clear enough for you to be able to understand it a little bit.
मुझे आशा है कि मैं काफी स्पष्टता से बात कर रहा हूँ ताकि आप कुछ समझ रहे हैं.
At least you've understood some of the words, I hope.
कम से कम आप मेरे जो शब्द कहे हैं उन्हें कुछ पैसा समझ रहे हैं.
I hope you've understood, for instance, that prajna does not mean knowledge.
तो आपने कम से कम इतनी बात शायद समझी होंगी मेरे से कि प्रज्ञा केवल ज्ञान नहीं है.
I hope you've realized that prajna means a complete reversal in the way in which we think. Or rather, in the way we experience things. So if somebody asked you afterwards, what did Subhuti talk about, you'd be able to say one or two things like that. That's quite an interesting exercise in itself. To go home after this and just explain to somebody a little bit of what I was saying. And that will test your Shrutamayi Prajna. So what you're mainly doing is trying to understand the words of the Dhamma as I'm expressing them. Of course, they're having some impact on you. The words are affecting you in various ways. You know, for instance, I talk about impermanence. Well, you'll be thinking about impermanence in your own life. But in this situation, the main thing is to get clear what the Dhamma says. What the Buddha says, what Baba Sahib says. We need to learn our ABC. We need to learn the basics of the Dhamma. I don't know whether you do this in India, but we used to have to learn in mathematics 2 2s are 4, 3 2s are 6, and so on.
तो आप यहाँ कैसा सीखते हैं मुझे पता नहीं, लेकिन अंग्रेजी में सीखना पड़ता है एक दो तीन चार एक सात.
So you learn off these sort of routines.
तो इस तरह से आप जो ऐसी कुछ अनित्य की बातें हैं वो सीखते हैं.
You don't know what two really is.
अब दो क्या है सही में इसलिए हमें पता नहीं.
You don't really know what four is.
और चार सही में क्या ये भी पता नहीं.
But you know that 2 times 2 equals 4.
लेकिन आप ये जानते हैं कि दो गुणिले दो मतलब चार होते हैं.
So that's right, isn't it? Yes, 2 times 2 equals 4. So you learn off these basic skills. And that means when you go to the shops, when you have two apples and two pears, you can add them together. So in this way you learn just the basic vocabulary of the Dhamma. I hope that from now on you'll be able to use the word prajna. And you'll be able to say, well, that's what we mean by prajna, that's not what we mean by prajna. And this is very, very important. I do think that if you're really serious about following the Bodhisattva path, you need to learn off the basics of the Dhamma. I remember when I was first getting involved with TBMSG, I used to have classes with Bhante Sangharakshita. And Bhante, every now and again, he would give us a Dhamma test. He'd say, what is the Eightfold Path? What are the five spiritual faculties? What are the hindrances? And we'd have to answer. And I remember so well that the top student was Dhammacharini Dhammadina. I'm afraid I was only middle student. But I remember that enabled me to remember the Dhamma. So I think it's very, very important that we know the basic lists of the Dhamma, that we know the basic terms of the Dhamma. So do you know them? If I started a Dhamma test at this point, how would you feel? Don't worry, you're quite safe. But if I just said, what are the Four Noble Truths? What are the five spiritual faculties? Would you be able to stand up and say what they were? So I suggest that you make a big effort to just learn off the basics of the Dhamma. You should know more or less what's in the Buddha and his Dhamma. And there are other very good books that give you a basic introduction to the terms of the Dhamma. And at our TBMSG centres we conduct courses in Dhamma. And at the moment we're doing this year-long training at Nagaloka. And I hope that all of those with the little cards around their neck, they would be able to answer the questions. But don't worry, I'm not going to ask you. They're looking very worried at the front here. But yes, that's where you need to start, to know the Dhamma. Just to open your ears, let the Dhamma go in. And make sure it doesn't come out the other ear. You try to keep it inside your head. So that's the first step towards prajna. Just knowing the teachings. The second step is chintamayi prajna. We've seen that just knowing the words doesn't equal prajna proper. We need at least as the next step, the wisdom that consists in reflection. We need to test the words of the Dhamma in our own experience. We need to reflect upon them and see whether they make sense.
और इन पर हमें चिंतन करने की आवश्यकता होती है ताकि इसका अर्थ हमें हमारे समझ में आए.
We need to think about them to see whether we agree.
और हमें इसके लिए चिंतन करना पड़ता है ताकि हम इसके साथ सहमत होते हैं या नहीं.
We need to put them in our own words so that the Dhamma becomes our Dhamma.
हमें इस धर्म को अपने शब्दों में रखने की आवश्यकता पड़ती है ताकि ये धर्म हमारा धर्म हो जाए.
That means sitting down at various times and just thinking.
इसका मतलब किसी समय बैठना और केवल सोचना.
A very good exercise is to sit down with a Dhamma principle and just write.
बहुत ही अच्छा एक अभ्यास है आप धम्म के किसी तत्व के लिए बैठते हैं और उसके ऊपर लिखना शुरू करते हैं.
I remember Kumar Ajeev telling me that a while ago he was doing this exercise.
तो कुमार जी मुझे बता रहे थे एक बार कि एक समय वो ऐसा अभ्यास कर रहे
थे. He'd just take something like impermanence and just write whatever came into his mind about it.
तो अभी के इस बात को लेते थे और मन में जो कुछ आता है वो लिखते थे.
I don't know whether he's still doing this practice.
तो उनको पता नहीं अभी वो इस अभ्यास को कर रहे हैं या नहीं.
Maybe he's moved on to higher things. So it's very good to deliberately build into your life some reflection.
तो जानबूझकर हम कोशिश करते हैं अपने जीवन में कुछ चिंतन निर्माण करने.
Well, let's take impermanence.
तो हम अनित्य के बारे में.
This is a very basic insight of the Buddha.
तो ये धम्म की एक मूलभूत ऐसी अंतर्दृष्टि है.
If we really understood that word impermanence, we'd be enlightened. Prajna would become.
अगर सही में हम अनित्य के शब्द को समझते हैं तो हमारे अंदर प्रज्ञा आएगी.
So we try to reflect on impermanence.
तो हम अनित्य पर सोचने की कोशिश करते हैं.
We've heard that everything is impermanent. That's Shrutamaya Prajna.
तो हम सुनते हैं कि सब कुछ अनित्य है, तो ये है Shrutamaya Prajna.
So we're now trying to reflect upon that Dhamma teaching.
तो हमें अभी कोशिश करना चाहिए कि धम्म शिक्षा का चिंतन करें.
So we think, well, okay. The Buddha says that everything is impermanent. Well, for instance, let's take this lecture series. Just a few days ago, it wasn't here. It was just an idea. It was just something that we'd been talking about and planning. But right now, it's almost over. So yes, this lecture series itself illustrates impermanence. Even these words that I'm speaking right now, they're coming and they're going. Yes, more words come, but the old ones have gone. No word just hangs there permanently in front of you. Every word comes into existence, passes away again. So everything that's going on right now is impermanent. So you just think like this. You just think of all your experience of impermanence. Perhaps particularly the things that you were surprised to find were impermanent. You reflect that, well, even your pain is impermanent. Something happens that you find very, very unpleasant, very painful. But if you think about it, it's going to end. But that's true also of happiness. Something's happening that you're really, really enjoying. But it's going to come to an end. So in this way you reflect on impermanence in your actual experience. But you even think in a critical way. You say, okay, the Buddha says that everything is impermanent. Is it? Can I think of anything that is permanent? But what about a mountain, for instance? You look at a mountain, it's so big, so solid. So you think, well, that mountain must be permanent. But I read the other day in the papers that a the biggest mountain in New Zealand, from the top of the biggest mountain in New Zealand, a big chunk fell off. Mountains even fall apart. And it seems as if all mountains are either going up or coming down. Even the Himalayas, they're still rising up. So what we think of as a solid mountain is actually like a wave of the sea. So in this way we try to reflect and see whether we can find a hole in the Buddha's argument. Then we think about the significance of that teaching. What does it mean if everything's impermanent? What effect does that have on my life? It means I can't find security in the things in this life. There's no safe refuge in conditioned things. You can't go for refuge to things in this world. What can you go for refuge to? Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. They are not impermanent. Enlightenment is always present as a possibility. The truth is always the truth. And the community of individuals throughout space and time working towards enlightenment is always present. So in this way you think about the significance of the teaching. So that brings us on to the third and final level of prajna. This is bhavnamai prajna. Bhavna means development, really. In this context, it means making to become. So bhavnamai prajna means the wisdom that consists in development. And especially it means development in meditation. It's not enough just to hear the words of the Dhamma. It's not enough to think about those words. You need to experience them directly in your meditation. So you develop a very strong, concentrated, refined, purified state of mind. And then you reflect on the Dhamma. And then that enables you to see the real meaning behind the words of the Dhamma. Usually when we think about things, there's not much energy behind them. So for instance, if we say right now, everything is impermanent, there's not the full concentration of our mind behind that reflection. It's a bit as if we're trying to hammer a nail in. And we are using a feather to knock it in. You're just hitting the nail with the feather, but nothing happens. But when you start to reflect in meditation, it's a bit like you're hitting that nail with a big hammer. There's the whole energy of your mind behind your reflection.
आपके चिंतन के पीछे आपके मन की पूरी शक्ति होती है.
So in goes the nail.
और ये किला में दीवार में चला जाता.
You penetrate to the real truth, the real meaning of those words.
और ये शब्दों के सही अर्थ पर आप पहुंच जाते.
So on the basis of dhyana, with the mind integrated and purified, you can break through.
इसलिए ध्यान साधना की बुनियाद पर आपका मन शुद्ध करने के बाद आप
And then you really see impermanence.
और बाद में आप सही में अनित्य देख सकते.
It's not just an idea.
ये केवल कल्पना नहीं है.
And you're free from the notion of self or soul.
और बाद में आपका जो आत्मा का जो विचार होता है इससे आप मुक्त हो जाते.
And you feel completely free of self.
और आप अहम से पूर्णतः मुक्त हो जाते.
That means you experience boundless compassion.
इसका मतलब आप
And the mind of the Bodhisattva has dawned in you. And you have prajna. So this is what we need to be doing. We need to be hearing the Dhamma clearly. Even learning the Dhamma off by heart. We need to be reflecting on the Dhamma. Discussing it with other people. Just writing down our reflections on the Dhamma. And we need to be using our concentrated mind in meditation to reflect on the Dhamma. Yes, in meditation. So, for instance, if you're practicing mindfulness of the breath, you apply that mind. You become concentrated on the breath. Your mind becomes a bit more refined. And you spend half an hour, 40 minutes doing that practice. And at the end of that period of time, you begin to reflect on the breath. You just begin to think, well, this breath is impermanent. It comes and it goes. We say breath, but actually it's just a constant flow of air in and out of the body. So we apply our concentrated and refined mental state to reflection on the Dhamma. And in this way, you will begin to develop something of prajna. And that will be the basis for the final dawning of prajna paramita. And prajna paramita transforms all the other five into paramitas. Because you've got prajna, dana becomes a paramita. That means when you give, you don't think of me. You don't think, I am giving. You just give. It's just completely spontaneous. Just completely selfless. You don't even think this is mine and now I'm giving it to you, so it's yours. You see a need, you give. With prajna, shila becomes shila paramita. You don't have to think about keeping the precepts. You just spontaneously act in a considerate and helpful way towards other beings. All your action is entirely spontaneous. With prajna, kshanti becomes kshanti paramita. You couldn't react to other people. You feel so much for other people. You understand their needs. Even if they're hurting you, you can't be angry with them. It'd be like being angry with yourself. With prajna, virya becomes virya paramita. Your energy just flows completely spontaneously. There's no barrier, there's no blockage. You don't think, I am being energetic. You don't think, I must make an effort. You just make an effort. With prajna, dhyana becomes dhyana paramita. You just spontaneously meditate. All the time, you're in dhyana state. All the time, your mind is concentrated and uplifted. So in this way, prajna transforms all the other virtues into paramitas. So we've covered some very lofty territory indeed. We're really at the top of the mountain. And I can see that some of you are getting a little tired. Maybe some of you feel, well, there's such a big drop down below you. But we're just going to stay up here a little bit longer. And then we'll come down from the mountain. But we won't forget what we've seen when we were up there. So I want to look at what Baba Sahib says about prajna, paramita, in the Buddha and his Dhamma. So Subhuti asks the Buddha, what is a bodhisattva's perfection of wisdom? Perfection of wisdom, yeah. And the Buddha answers, so Baba Sahib says, like this. He does not settle down in any Dhamma. He contemplates the essential, original nature of all Dhammas. And others he instigates to the contemplation of all Dhammas. Now this needs some explanation. The first point is that when the Buddha and when Baba Sahib uses the word Dhamma here, it doesn't mean the Dhamma in the usual sense. This is something that you have to realize. What's meant here is not the Dhamma as the teaching or doctrine or the truth. In English, we distinguish between a capital letter and a small letter. So we usually write Dhamma as doctrine or truth with a capital D. With this Dhamma is written with a small D. You can't do this in your script. But so what is Dhamma with a small D? It means an experience or a thought or a content of mind. It means something in your mind. It means a mental state. Something you're experiencing. So, let's look at it again, understanding that. He does not settle down in any experience. A bodhisattva doesn't settle down in any thought or experience. So the bodhisattva is always open to experience. Whatever comes, whatever happens, he's open to it. Usually we try to settle down in an experience. We try to cling on to experience. But the bodhisattva, according to the Buddha, according to Baba Sahib, is completely open to experience. He's not fixed or attached to experience. He's open, fluid, creative. Then the bodhisattva contemplates the essential, original nature of all experience. The essential, original nature of all experience. So whatever is before him, the bodhisattva sees its real nature. He's not fooled by anything that comes to him. He realizes that everything that he experiences is impermanent, unreal, painful if seized upon. So the bodhisattva lives with truth all the time. And everything that he sees in the light of truth. So the bodhisattva lives completely at ease. He lives at peace with all things. And with a loving relationship with all other beings. And especially the bodhisattva feels great compassion for beings who do not understand the real nature of things. Then finally, Baba Sahib quotes the Buddha saying this. He encourages others to see the true nature of all experience. So the bodhisattva encourages other people to understand the real nature of their lives. This is what Baba Sahib did. This is why he wrote the Buddha and his Dhamma. He wanted to put the Dhamma before us. He wanted to put it before us so that we would hear it. So that we would reflect upon it. And so that we would meditate upon it. So that we would understand its real meaning. So Baba Sahib tried to encourage us to practice prajna. So we've been right to the top of the mountain. And really it is time now to come down. If we stay up there too long, we couldn't breathe. Our strength would go. So we have to come down the mountain. But I think we've seen today what we've got to do. If we want to follow Baba Sahib's footsteps, we know what to do. Let's study the Dhamma. Learn it thoroughly. Just take the Buddha and his Dhamma, read a bit every day, and try to understand it. Make contact with other people who want to study the Dhamma. Come to some of our courses, some of our classes if you want to. Maybe apply for next year's Nagaloka training. And there will be all sorts of classes and courses out there at Nagaloka as too. There are other people who are studying the Dhamma as well, other Buddhist groups. But try to develop Shrutamayi Prajna. And think about the Dhamma. I suggest you do take up this practice of just writing every day a little bit of your thoughts about the Dhamma. Take something that really strongly appeals to you and just privately just write. You don't have to show anybody else. You could write poems. You could write a poem about impermanence, for instance. But in this way, you think about the Dhamma. You practice Chintamayi Prajna. And then if you're meditating, spend some time after each meditation session reflecting on the Dhamma. And in that way, you'll be practicing Bhavanamayi Prajna. And if you do that, over the years, you'll go deeper and deeper into Prajna. And then one day, Prajna Paramita will dawn within you. The Bodhicitta will arise within you. And you will be a Bodhisattva in the full and true sense. And that will be, of course, following in Baba Sahib's footsteps. So, let's dedicate ourselves to this task. Let's again take together those four vows of the Bodhisattva. As usual, you do it if you want to. Nothing is compulsory in Dhamma. The Dhamma is for free men and women. But if you want to, you can recite these vows after Kumarajeev recites them in Hindi. And then after that, I will recite the verses of transference of merits. And anything that you've gained from this evening, you can dedicate to all other beings. So first of all, the four Bodhisattva vows. There are beings without limit. I vow to convey them all across. There are kleshas within us without number. I vow to extinguish them all. There are dhammas without end. I vow to comprehend them all. There is the way of the Buddha without comparison. I vow to accomplish it perfectly. Evam sab karke. Maine jo punyarjan kiya hai. Use sab praniyon ka. Sarva duk shaman karibanun. जय से पृथ्वी आदि महाभूत
अनंत आकाश पर्यंत व्याप्त
अंगिमात प्रण्यंक
नाना प्रकाशे
भोगी होते हैं
वैसे ही
आकाश व्याप्त प्राणियों के लिए
मैं तब तक
नाना प्रकाशे
उपजीव्य हूँ
जब तक कि
सब शांति का
लाभ न काले। जय भीम।